This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. A very special happy birthday to Jackie Sam. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Tommy Warrenoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Caron, Hani Masood. Also thanks to Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Sanji Lopez. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, Hugh Grant, Dennis Moynihan, David Prude, Dennis McCormick, Matt Ely, Emily Anderson, and Clara Ibarra. To see all of our podcasts in video and audio, go to democracynow.org. You can also read all of our transcripts there. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
I'm Molly, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
Your cheating heart will make you weep.
September 17th is the 100th anniversary of the birth of Hank Williams Sr., one of the finest singer-songwriters this country has ever produced. KBOO Swingin' Country is celebrating this event by dedicating an entire broadcast to the music of Hank Williams. Tune in to KBOO Swingin' Country on Saturday, September 30th from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. for 3 hours of all things Hank Williams considered. We'll have songs sung by Hank, songs written by Hank, and songs about Hank. You don't want to miss it. Once again, that is Saturday, September 30th from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. on KBOO.FM or 90.7 FM in the Portland area. Son of a gun, we'll have some fun.
I'm the sweetest one, me, oh my, oh. Son of a gun, we'll have big fun on the bayou.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up in the KBOO Evening News, with COVID counts rising and immunizations on the way, what doctors say we can do to protect ourselves for the fall virus season. Washington's governor speaks out on steps to attack climate change at a national conference featuring governors from several states, and a celebration of Hispanic heritage in a western state. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, September 21st, 2023. I'm Annette Newell. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. Today, Oregon doctors announced what they're expecting for the upcoming respiratory virus season. This comes as cases of COVID-19 and hospitalizations are edging up in Oregon, and as the state's still weeks away from having the latest version of the vaccine widely available. Dr. Paul Cieslak is the Oregon Health Authority's Medical Director for Communicable Diseases and Immunizations.
Some of you might recall a similar news conference we held early last December when State Health Officer Dr. Dean Seidlinger was joined by clinician partners from OHSU, Providence, and Legacy to ask Oregonians for their help in managing a surge in respiratory viruses that overwhelmed our hospitals. The surge triggered an emergency declaration from Oregon's governor and forced some hospitals to initiate crisis standards of care so they could adjust patient care practices to ease their significant staff capacity issues. At this point, with continued transmission, but widespread partial immunity from vaccination and previous infection, COVID-19 is endemic. We're in a different place. In May, we saw the ending of the federal public health emergency, which led to our lifting remaining mask and vaccination requirements. We updated guidance that had recommended 5-day isolation after COVID-19 infection to advise staying home until fever-free for 24 hours and symptoms were improving, avoiding contact with those at high risk for severe illness, and considering masking for 10 days. And we changed how we monitor and report COVID-19 to mirror how we've done it for influenza. While transmission of COVID-19 continued, according to our wastewater surveillance data, hospitalizations and COVID test positivity dropped significantly over the summer. But the potential for another respiratory surge that swamps our hospitals and healthcare system still exists. Even before COVID-19, influenza and RSV could overwhelm hospitals in some regions of the state. COVID-19 has been putting many more people in the hospital than influenza and RSV. So we have to expect that surges in respiratory virus hospitalizations will be worse. Straining of hospital capacity will be an issue nationwide, and perhaps more so in Oregon, where we're additionally challenged by the fact that we have relatively few hospital beds per capita. Since the end of May, we have seen a steady increase in COVID-19 test positivity. It's gone from a low of 4.3% on May 27th to around 15% by September 16th. We've also seen the number of patients hospitalized with COVID-19 in Oregon double, from 106 on June 21st to 219 on September 19th. And although influenza and RSV activity remains low, we do expect it to go up during the fall, with students back in school and people heading indoors to escape colder temperatures and the rain and to gather during the holidays. Vaccination is the best way to protect yourself against infection and hospitalization by respiratory viruses. Last week, CDC's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices voted to recommend updated COVID-19 vaccines for the 2023-2024 respiratory virus season. They are designed to protect against the XBB sublineages of the Omicron variant, which account for more than 95% of the circulating virus variants in the United States. CDC recommends that everyone 6 months and older get the updated COVID-19 vaccines to protect against the potentially serious outcomes of COVID-19 this fall and winter, including hospitalization and death. COVID-19 vaccines also reduce the chance of having long COVID. Many factors affect the exact timing of the vaccine's arrival in Oregon and the rest of the country, but we expect healthcare providers and pharmacies to begin scheduling COVID shots over the next several weeks. It's important to remember that a major goal of vaccination is to broaden immunity, even if vaccine formulations do not perfectly match currently circulating viruses. That's why each year we still have highly recommended the influenza vaccine, even as its effectiveness has hovered around 50%. Plus, if you've had the flu shot, you're less likely to have severe influenza and be hospitalized. On the RSV front, a new RSV monoclonal antibody immunization for babies and toddlers called nirsevimab is expected to be available commercially and to healthcare providers enrolled in the Vaccines for Children, the VFC program, later this fall. We're watching RSV activity closely and will communicate to local public health and healthcare partners as we see an uptick prior to season onset to guide nirsevimab administration for infants. A new RSV vaccine for adults 60 and older has been available on the commercial market for several weeks, so people should check with their insurance plan to make sure RSV vaccination is covered. CDC has not announced a timeline for when the new vaccines will arrive in state-sponsored vaccine programs, such as Oregon's Vaccine Access Program, which provides free vaccines to eligible children and adults. Insurance plans will cover the COVID-19 and influenza vaccines when they are available. The Affordable Care Act requires insurers to cover most ACIP recommended vaccines without cost sharing, such as copays or deductibles. People could get the COVID-19 and influenza vaccines by contacting their health plan, healthcare provider, county public health clinic, or federally qualified health center. They can also search for a clinic by zip code by visiting vaccinefinder.org or by calling 211 or visiting 211info.org. Remember that there are antiviral treatments for influenza and for COVID-19. People at high risk should plan to get tested, and if positive, to start antiviral therapy promptly should they develop respiratory illness.
That was Dr. Paul Cieslak, the Oregon Health Authority's Medical Director for Communicable Diseases and Immunizations, offering his update and predictions for the upcoming respiratory virus season. Dr. Katie Scharf is the Chief of Infectious Diseases at Kaiser Permanente Northwest. Here, she offers her expectations for the coming virus season, recent developments in vaccines, and how people can protect themselves and others from COVID, flu, and RSV.
If we see even a small surge in flu, COVID, RSV, or the three viruses at the same time that could overwhelm an already very stretched healthcare system. But along those lines, we actually have important tools that are available to protect ourselves, our family members, and our community against these respiratory viruses with new vaccines and new products for RSV. And so I just wanted to briefly highlight some important features about each of these vaccines. Just to start with flu vaccine, I think as a community, we underestimate the significance of influenza virus. Last year, it's estimated that flu was responsible for 58,000 flu-related deaths in the United States. The flu vaccine is updated each season, and so it's important to get an updated vaccine for everyone age 6 months and older. But despite that, last year, only about 50% of Oregonians chose to get the flu vaccine. So just want to urge every eligible person to get an updated flu shot this season and every season. Moving on to the COVID vaccine, I guess just to educate that the COVID vaccine this season is not necessarily considered a booster, because it's a completely reformulated strain to protect against the current circulating variants. And really the importance of the COVID-19 vaccine is to prevent severe disease and hospitalization. And so we really need to focus our efforts on vaccinating those individuals who are highest risk for severe disease and hospitalization. That includes elderly individuals, immunocompromised patients, patients with chronic medical conditions, and then pregnant women. And then moving on to RSV. RSV stands for respiratory syncytial virus, which is considered a seasonal virus, usually peaking late fall to early spring. And, you know, RSV causes significant burden in the extremes of age. So in the elderly, it caused up to 100,000 hospitalizations in the United States last year. And it's the leading cause of hospitalizations for infants in the United States. But this year, we actually have multiple new products. It's really a groundbreaking year for RSV to protect against infection. So for individuals 60 and older, there are vaccines to protect against RSV infection. There's also a RSV vaccine that's available for pregnant individuals in their third trimester. And finally, as Dr. Cieslak reviewed, there's a new monoclonal antibody called nirsevimab that's available to infants in their first RSV season to protect against infection. Just to give you a framework here at Kaiser Permanente, we are already administering influenza vaccines, anticipate having COVID vaccines available as early as next week, and then anticipate RSV vaccines as well as a monoclonal antibody product, nirsevimab, for infants shortly thereafter. One question I always get, both from friends, family, and other clinicians, is what kind of respiratory season it's going to be, like predict what kind of flu season we're going to have. And I wish I could say with any sort of certainty what kind of respiratory season we will have. But just to give you some framework, we often look to the southern hemisphere for our influenza season, because flu is considered a seasonal virus. And this year, the southern hemisphere had somewhat of an early flu season that appeared to impact unvaccinated children. So although I can't say with certainty that will be what we have here, but that is somewhat of a bellwether for us here in Oregon. And then I think the pattern of COVID is still uncertain. We're not quite sure if COVID is considered a seasonal virus, as we see surges in both summer and winter months. But I think, you know, the important thing is that if we see an increase in all three viruses at the same time, that is when we could potentially see a crushing our currently strained healthcare system. In closing, I just want to say, as a physician, as a parent, as a community member, it is so discouraging to see our healthcare system become overwhelmed during respiratory viral season. And that leads to delays in care. It leads to canceled surgeries. It leads to long wait times in clinics.
And that was Kaiser Permanente Northwest Chief of Infectious Diseases, Dr. Katie Scharf. Washington Governor Jay Inslee was among the members of the U.S. Climate Alliance speaking in New York today. Inslee is the alliance's co-chair, along with New York Governor Kathy Hochul. He announced some of the goals and progress of the Climate Alliance, its leading governors, and the Biden administration.
Thank you, Governor of New York. It's great to be here. You got a great city. Trudy and I were just up looking at an office that have urban agriculture. They had a garden up on a 12th floor. and we enjoyed some of their tomatoes. And Trudy had the line, if you can grow it here, you can grow it anywhere. And I thought that really says something about New York and the state of New York. Thanks for your leadership. This is very exciting to me. I remember when Jerry Brown and I of California had this idea, and he says, I don't know if this is going to work. And I said, the day will come when we're going to get 20 million people heat pumps, Jerry, and here we are today. So there's some good news in this regard. Look, I think all Americans have certain rights. Among those rights are the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of heat pumps. And the reason this is so important to Americans is pretty simple. We want to be warm in the winter, and we want to be cool in the summer, and we want to prevent the climate from collapsing all year long. And there is no greater invention in human history to do those three things than a heat pump. Not only because it can keep you warm in the winter, but it can keep you cool in the summer. And it's kind of unfortunately named, because right now people are having as much trouble staying cool in the summer as they are staying warm in the winter. And with increasing climate change, we are both fighting climate change at its source, which is reducing the need for oil and gas. But we're also helping people to accommodate these warmer and hotter temperatures. We're starting to need air conditioning in Seattle, Washington. That means we got a problem. And we're helping people across the country deal with that problem. I think heat pumps are the most beautiful technology invented since the wool socks. And so I am very excited about what we're doing here for people. And I really am excited about the U.S. Climate Alliance leading this effort. It does show you what we can do in the states. But before I say anything about the states, I want to credit the leadership of President Joe Biden with the Inflation Reduction Act, which is going to get $180 million in my state to help people get heat pumps. Thank you, Joe Biden, and thank you all for your leadership. But this is just not kind of a wish list of 25 governors. It's an actual meat on the bones plan to get this job done. I want to share with you how we're going to get this job in Washington State. First, we have created a cap and invest program, which has created over $1 billion of resources where we can actually use to help people get these heat pumps. And we've committed already $150 million, almost matching the federal grant, to actually buy people, low-income people, to bring equity to this issue and environmental justice at the same time we're saving the planet. And that $150 million matched with what the federal government's going to do is going to help people all across the state of Washington when it is needed, even in my state. We're putting meat on the bone. And we're doing that with the cap and invest bill, which makes sure that the polluters pay for this. The polluters ought to pay for this, not just ordinary citizens. And to me, this is a fair way to finance this. Now, of course, that's been attacked. We won't take no for an answer. Secondly, we are making sure that we are moving forward with a new way to heat our buildings. Connecting a building today with dirty, toxic gas, it'd be like connecting your house, instead of a garage for your car, to put in a stable. Gas is an old, antiquated, dirty, dangerous product. So I'm proud to tell you we are the first state in the United States by using our building codes to make sure that people, when they get a new home or a new office, they get a heat pump, not dirty gas, which creates 16% increased rates of asthma and contributes to climate change. That's the future and that's the present, and we're going to make sure it happens in my state. Now, I think there was an emerging discussion at the UN the other day. We were proud of Governor Newsom, who addressed the UN, who made something very clear. Climate change fundamentally is a fossil fuel problem. The source of climate change is fossil fuels. The source of climate change in our homes and offices is gas hookups. Those gas hookups need to stop, and they need to stop today. And I'll tell you why. There's a physical principle, I think it was discovered by Einstein, that when you are in a hole, stop digging. We are in a hole because of fossil fuels. We need to stop digging a deeper hole. We need to get people heat pumps and solar panels and insulations, and that's going to cure this problem. And I'm glad we're doing it, starting in 25 states. So I am very excited about the progress we're making. I look forward to this delivery, and I look forward to a lot of more comfortable, less utility bill victimized people in these 25 states. I went to a little house in Wenatchee, Washington the other day. I met this woman of a certain age. She was just thrilled. We got her a little insulation and her bill went down from $200 for utilities, and it's kind of cold in Wenatchee and hot in the summer, down to $50. She was thrilled. Let's get people to not have to pay for a dirty gas more than they should be paying, getting them to less paid electricity and keep them warmer and cooler. That's a future for America, and we're starting with 25 states.
That was Washington Governor Jay Inslee speaking today at the U.S. Climate Alliance in New York. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for KBOO News In Depth with the Global Citizen International Digest. At 6, it's Rose City Native Radio. Then at 7, American Indian Airwaves. Tonight's weather, clear skies, a low down to 50. Tomorrow's weather, lots of sunshine, a high of 79. Today in history, on this date in 1780, during the American Revolution, American General Benedict Arnold met with a British major to talk about handing over West Point to the British in return for a large amount of money and a high position in the British Army. The plot was foiled, and Benedict Arnold's name became synonymous with the word traitor. Our quote of the day is from Benedict Arnold. What do you think would be my fate if my misguided countrymen were to take me prisoner? You can avoid a last-minute crunch of choosing a health plan if you start now. Tramell Gomes reports many people can start making changes in their health plans by mid-September, and experts strongly advise against making a last-minute decision when you're choosing your health insurance.
When it comes to open enrollment and navigating the many healthcare options, experts say starting your research sooner rather than later is the best approach. Understanding health insurance coverage benefits and comparing plans is critical so people get the coverage they need and can keep costs affordable for the coming year. The enrollment period starts November 1st on Health Insurance Marketplace. For employer-sponsored coverage, it's typically between September and December. And for people on Medicare, annual enrollment runs from October 15th through December 7th. Scott Darius is with the nonprofit Florida Voices for Health, focused on increasing access to care.
I would encourage people to go look at their options and really find out what's out there and to work with a navigator, first of all, to really understand what those options are and what works best for them.
He suggests using a navigator or a certified application counselor who can search for options. He also warns to be wary of possible private bad actors who might be working on commission. Dr. Rhonda Randall with United Healthcare says comparing plans and taking time to learn the basic insurance vocabulary like deductibles, copays, coinsurance, premiums, and more are critical for understanding your benefits.
We have a tool called Just Plain Clear. It's a glossary that you can find online. And for our Medicare Advantage members, a companion called Medicare Made Clear.
For people without employer-sponsored insurance, predicting income can be difficult for the year ahead. So if you're a seasonal worker or independent contractor, make an effort to estimate your income based on this year's invoices or pay stubs, and to use any help available to get you through the complicated process of choosing health coverage. This is Tramell Gomes.
Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell warns that government shutdowns are a loser for Republicans. Meantime, Majority Leader Chuck Schumer takes action to sidestep Senator Tuberville's opposition to military appointments over abortion policy. And advocates call on Connecticut's governor to upgrade election infrastructure. With more on the stories impacting our democracy, here's today's edition of 2023 Talks.
Republican leadership of this House is incompetent. I mean, they're so incompetent it takes my breath away. They're letting the clowns run the circus.
Democratic Massachusetts Congressman Jim McGovern is ripping into GOP leaders for letting extremists run the House less than 10 days before a government shutdown. Republican senators are also growing frustrated with House Speaker Kevin McCarthy's inability to pass spending legislation blocked by a small group of hardline conservatives. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell says shutdowns have always hurt Republicans.
I've seen a few of them over the years. They never have produced a policy change. And they've always been a loser for Republicans politically.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer is bringing three military nominations to a vote despite a block by Alabama Republican Senator Tommy Tuberville over a Pentagon abortion travel policy. Schumer says Tuberville is abusing his power and disrupting the lives of military families.
The Senate should not have to go through procedural hoops just to please one brazen and misguided senator. But this is where we are.
The Federal Reserve has decided there won't be an interest rate hike this quarter, but signaled there might be one later this year, depending on inflation. Attorney General Merrick Garland told House Judiciary his department pursues justice without fear or favor, even when investigating former President Donald Trump, current President Joe Biden, or Biden's son, Hunter.
As the president himself has said, and I reaffirm today, I am not the president's lawyer. I will add, I am not Congress's prosecutor.
At least six states are looking at banning voting tabulation machines, but not Connecticut. In fact, advocates want Governor Ned Lamont to replace outdated scanners with new, more reliable machines. John Erlinghauser with AARP Connecticut says the current models can jam, meeting lines on Election Day and pressure on poll workers.
They don't manufacture them anymore. They break down frequently. People are having to get replacement parts for the voting machines on things like eBay.
Automatic tabulators are faster and more accurate than hand counts. The nonpartisan Make Elections Fair Committee is pushing to amend Arizona's constitution. Their initiative would end partisan primaries, making them open to all candidates and voters. And it would give voters the chance to select more than one candidate, possibly having that choice influence who makes it to the general election. Committee Chair Sarah Smallhouse says the current system is unfair to independent or unaffiliated candidates and voters who are the state's largest single block.
It's fundamentally a question of fairness, of giving everyone equal opportunity to participate in our political system.
Finally, Biden and leftist Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva reaffirmed their shared commitment to protecting democracy. Biden and Lula, a former union leader, also announced an initiative for working people. I'm Alex Gonzalez.
Maya groups in Guatemala are calling for nationwide road blockades, protesting the government's apparent actions to block the takeover of a newly elected president. With that story and more, here's today's edition of National Native News.
Indigenous Guatemalans, who make up nearly half that country's population, continue to protest their government's apparent actions to block the takeover over former President Bernardo Arevalo, elected in a landslide last month. This week, various Maya groups called for nationwide road blockades and protests. Maria Martin reports.
The indigenous organizations CODECAM and 48 cantones, or 48 villages, block traffic at more than a dozen crossroads and bridges throughout Guatemala. They're calling for the resignation of corrupt Justice Department officials they accuse of interfering with the results of the recent presidential election. This participant blocking the highway in Totonicapán says these corrupt government officials, including Attorney General Consuelo Porras, are harming the country. CODECA leader Delma Cabrera, whose own presidential candidacy was blocked by the courts earlier this year, says the blockades are the only option allowed Guatemalans whose popular will is being ignored.
Respetar la voluntad del pueblo.
Meanwhile, the U.S. government says it's prepared to level sanctions against those who block Guatemalans' presidential transition. For National Native News, I'm Maria Martin.
Senator Alex Padilla, chair of the Environment and Public Works Subcommittee on Fisheries, Water, and Wildlife, held a hearing entitled Drinking Water and Wastewater Infrastructure in Tribal Communities. Testimonies were given from tribal water experts and stakeholders on a range of water-related issues for tribes in the United States, including lack of access to infrastructure, deferred maintenance of existing infrastructure, inadequate water quality, and workforce development shortfalls. Padilla spoke about the statistics of running water and sanitation in Native American homes.
Native American households are 19 times more likely than white households to lack indoor pipes for running water and sanitation. Inadequate water supply and deteriorating pipes can impact the public health, education, and economic development of tribal communities. If you can't trust the water you're drinking or the plumbing that keeps your home sanitary, it harms your quality of life.
Jola Wallowingbull is the director of the Northern Arapaho Tribal Engineering Department and is a member of the Northern Arapaho Tribe from the Wind River Indian Reservation. She states that the application approval process is delaying repairs and is causing many tribal homes to get worse while people wait for assistance.
While we wait for applications to be approved, our work cannot and does not wait. Leaks and other issues continue while our requests slowly move through the approval process. We plug holes as best we can, but the review system ensures that we are always addressing emergencies rather than allocating our resources to planning future development.
The Indian Health Service reports that approximately 17% of American Indian and Alaska Native homes lack adequate sanitation facilities.
I'm Jill Freitas.
September 15th through October 15th marks Hispanic Heritage Month, and One Western State is celebrating the economic and cultural contributions made by people who traveled north from New Mexico's Spanish settlements. Eric Galatis has more on the story.
While many Wyomingites of Hispanic descent came from Mexico, there's a lesser-known population from the old Spanish settlements of northern New Mexico that made significant contributions to the state's cultural heritage and economic growth. Dr. Tricia Martinez with the University of Wyoming has been documenting oral histories of families who came to the cowboy state along the Manito Trail, a corridor now occupied by Interstate 25. She says most came to work and support their families.
In northern New Mexico, the reality was really hard in terms of socioeconomic conditions, and so migrating outside of the state was a necessity for survival.
Workers from New Mexico and southern Colorado were recruited to work on the railroad, in the sugar beet industry, and as sheep herders in the early 20th century, and now have permanent communities in the state going back several generations. Most sheep herders in the Sierra Madres of southern Wyoming traveled along the Manito Trail, and many made long-lasting impressions on aspen trees. As Amanda Castaneda with the Wyoming State Historic Preservation Office explains, these arbor glyphs were created with sharp tools carving thin lines that would expand as the trees grew. Many were straightforward, featuring family names or dates.
But you're also seeing some really beautiful drawings, a lot of religious imagery, glamorous women with 40s and 50s style haircuts. So you can come across some pretty striking artistic accomplishments in the forest.
Workers and their families settled in segregated Laramie's west side, the south side of Cheyenne, the South Park Barrio of Riverton, and the south side of Rawlins, where residents still maintain traditions from their home region. Martinez says many of her students are surprised to learn that their direct ancestors traveled the Manito Trail.
They go home and they ask questions. They call their grandparents to learn more. When students explore their communities and histories, they affirm their connection to ancestral knowledge and life-producing energies.
This is Eric Galatis.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, September 21st, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Eric Galatis and Tramell Gomes. The producer is Annette Newell, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Public News Service and Native Voice One. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K2A2 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Annette Newell. Thanks for joining us. All our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321.